Good afternoon, everyone. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. And I have to apologize for missing last Thursday, but I was flat on my back, sick in bed. I picked up some kind of a bug or something. Still a little bit with me here. So if I cough or wheeze or blow my nose, whatever, you know what's going on. Don't be alarmed. I'm better, but I'm not out of the woods yet. This all happened because Dr. Richard Allen Miller, Rick Miller, invited me over to a party at his house on Saturday to meet with Nick Begich, the guy who wrote the book about HAARP. And some guy was there, said, "Oh, I'm really sick. I should be at home, but I had to come meet Nick Begich." So I got it 2 days later. Anyway, enough about that. Our guest today is managing editor of VeteransToday.com, Mr. Jim Dean. Jim, welcome, sir. And there's that cough.
And we will think about Christmas next year, getting a hazmat suit for you for when you go out to occasions like that.
I know it. It just takes one knucklehead who doesn't have the common sense. When you're sick, stay home, stay in bed. Don't go out and spread your contagion among the world, you know? And, boy, this one hit me pretty hard, I got to tell you.
Well, I hope you're feeling back. I can tell you have a little bit of it left. I have spared. I went through almost 2 years now with no flu, which is new for me. But as you know, I've been on an intense health routine, so maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, maybe, but I have to tell you, you've got me, so I'm eating beans at least twice a day every day.
Good. And I've got some recipes. There's a, you have to be creative on different ways to fix them that are quick, or you can get tired of them and then have a variation. But after using some natural routines, I have several friends that crash their cholesterol issues very quickly, within 6 months to a year, using high doses of omega-3s. One of them was even confirmed by what do they call a catheter, when they can go in right into your veins with a little camera. Mm-hmm. And after a year, he had had a heart attack, had a stent put in. And then about a year afterwards, started getting another heart attack symptom. So his wife beat on him and got him to the hospital. And they thought he was having another heart attack. And it turned out that scar tissue had grown up around the stent, and that was closing off the artery, which gave him heart attack symptoms. And guess how often they told him that that happens?
Oh, I'd guess 25-30% of the time.
Actually not that high, but 10%. And I said, well, didn't they tell you something about after you had it that, to beware of this or that or whatever? He said, no. He said, they did not tell you a thing. The doctor just kind of told me casually, we have people come in, this happens about 10% of the time. But they went in and they have a way, they put a little screen in there and they take a cauterizer and they can just kind of burn the scar tissue away. But while they were doing that, they went around and checked the rest of the veins and the arteries in his heart, and they were clean as a whistle. Absolutely no plaque whatsoever. So he had been on the omega-3, 6,000 milligrams a day for a year. And then I had two other friends that in 6 months, they just crashed their numbers. So I got all excited and started dieting and exercising and doing all that. And I went in and I had a drop of maybe 10%, 8 or 10%, which they say even exercising is supposed to bring it down. So that was a big disappointment. And I went back and I started redoing my research. And I ran into a nutritionist that had what she considered to be a foolproof system. And she just said beans have a lot of soluble fiber in them, plus protein. And the trick is to eat 3 half cups a day, because bile, when you're digesting, typically gets reabsorbed back into your system. 10% of it goes out. So it gets reused over and over. And she said, the trick is soluble fiber binds with the bile, so it cannot be reabsorbed, and it passes out through your colon. And then your liver has to manufacture more bile, new bile, which he says is a good idea anyway, because you when you have clean bile, you don't end up with gallbladder problems. And then she said the magic phrase, to make bile, your liver has to pull cholesterol out of your blood system. And the bells went ding, 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 ding. And that pulls your content down. And she said, that's why you have to kind of spread it out during the day, because you just want to keep pulling it out. And I went through 3 months. I had a big drop, 25%. And then I went another 2 months and tested again. And I was down about another 18%. And I'm going to take another test. So I'm actually below the normal cholesterol now.
And outstanding.
Heading down to 150, because 150, they say you can reverse heart plaque and start getting rid of it. So that's our little Jim and Mike nutrition chat for the day.
Well, there you go. All right. So anyway, I like the beans because they're an extra source of protein. And, I go to the gym, I lift, you know what I do. And so it's just, more protein all day. And I've got myself on this Venuto plan of burn the fat, feed the muscle, trying to get myself super lean and, just get the muscle big and the fat gone. And so I'm eating 5 and 6 smaller meals a day and spreading them out over the day, just like your plan says.
Good. Well, I've got today, I thought we would follow up on the a Syrian ceasefire, what's going on there.
Okay, good.
And then in the after the break, I wanted to go in. I have recently discovered the Atlantic Council think tank. I had heard of them earlier a few times, but I saw an article where they had published something last year called Putin's War, and I had no idea that they were NATO's preeminent think tank. And that all of the propaganda, the Russia-phobia stuff, the smear Putin's going to revive the old Soviet Union and shut down MH17 and invaded Ukraine, all of that stuff came from the Atlantic Council. So
they're the guys who are creating all these fabrications to persuade public opinion in the West that Putin's the bad guy, when really he's the good guy.
Yep, and they have this thing just gold-plated with the esteemed people that they've got in it, so that nobody would ever think for a moment that these guys would just be a propaganda mill. So they're going to be a target. We're going to be looking into their shorts a little bit. And, of course, some of the stuff they've printed has been completely discredited by events. So we're going to go after them. And, we like the big guys, because when they fall, what happens, Mike? They make a big boom.
You hear a big boom. That's what I was going to say.
But we have been waiting with pins and needles. We had this situation that we had the ceasefire coming up, and then the story went cold for a couple of days. Nothing coming out of Washington much, nothing coming out of Russia. So we were going like, uh-oh, they're having problems. And then all of a sudden, they finally came out that only the U.S. and Russia were going to be in charge of monitoring the ceasefire. And that Russia ended up running the technical end from their airbase, because they've got all the maps, and really they've got Syria mapped out where everybody basically is. And all of the initial ceasefire violations and things like that were going to be going into the Russian base. The U.S. got the hotline. But when it came to taking action on ceasefire violators, that could only be done at the joint agreement of the U.S. and Russia. And, of course, the key operational thing there, folks, is to basically put everybody else out of the picture. No input from Saudi Arabia, no input from Turkey. Syria held themselves out there a little bit, because they said, we will take action against any terrorist organization that we feel necessary, because it is our country. So that was good news. So we kind of waited. And of course, during this time, we already had Turkey doing some shelling, calling for buffer zone inside Syria and creating the public relations gambit that we have a right to do anything we need to do in self-defense of terrorism. So they made the YPG Kurds the terrorist organization, although they never give any direct evidence why. They say they're related to the PKK, which is an official one, but they never show why they're related. They never bother with that. So we knew there were going to be problems there, and we didn't even really know for sure how many would sign up. So the good news was they had a good number of people that went ahead and joined the ceasefire because the U.S. and Russia put down the deadline. They said, you are either in it by such and such a date and time, or you are not. And ones who are not are subject to being bombed. And right away, the bells went ding, 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 ding. I think a lot of those guys are going to want to break from being bombed, and they're going to want humanitarian aid to come into their areas so they can get fed, and they probably want to break from the war. And as it's turning out, that's kind of happening. ISIL and al-Nusra, of course, are continuing their attacks, Syrian...
And there's mortar fire on the outskirts of Damascus yesterday.
Yep, and they're just trying to show their troops that we're still here and we're still fighting away. And, of course, that just makes them more reviled and much easier for but even then, the Syrians basically withheld their fire at the bequest of the Russians. They said, we want to go ahead, do a little rope-a-dope tactics, let them go ahead, violate the ceasefire over and over. And then when we have to take action against them, we'll have everybody on board. And they're trying to avoid a situation where they retaliate against something like that. And then certain parties accuse them of violating the ceasefire. You can imagine who that would be.
Oh, I can imagine.
So the good news is it is holding. Ban Ki-moon is very happy. And they've got the... peace talk negotiations scheduled for the 9th of March now. They had them scheduled for the 7th, and they added a couple of days. And Di Mistura, the UN coordinator, he brought up a very good reason for doing that. He says, we want to give a couple more days for the ceasefire to get settled in, because when we bring people to the next talks, we don't want it to turn into a forum of people screaming about ceasefire violations. We want to start off talking about political issues. We want to get momentum going on the political issues, and that means people actually sitting down and talking about what their demands and issues are to get that process rolling. And he said, we don't want the first meeting end up being people yelling across the table, you fired at me first. No, you fired at me, and we fired back. Well, so,
let me ask a question here, because this ceasefire and beginning negotiations, if you will, political negotiations, isn't that already 1 foot down the slippery slope for Bashar al-Assad in the Syrian government? Because by even sitting down with the insurgents, who are paid mercenaries from Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Israel, others, isn't that already legitimizing them and giving them a voice when they're not entitled to a voice in a sovereign nation?
Well, they have not told us exactly what their qualifications were, but they have called these people that are in part of the ceasefire and have been invited to be recognized opposition. And that's something that the Syrians signed off on, and the Russians, and the same with the U.S., So now I don't know if there's a different list in terms of those that signed on to the ceasefire and those who are going to be attending the conference, because the big Saudi group joined the ceasefire with conditions. They said, we'll only jump in for 2 weeks and then we'll see what's going on. But the main thing they're doing is, by having a successful ceasefire rolling, they want to slam the door shut on the problem they had beginning, and that's the Saudi group trying to come in and torpedo the talks by demanding preconditions. Pretty much what they wanted is to have everything they wanted agreed to up front. We want our prisoners released, and the dissettle. And even though in Geneva they said the key to getting this going is having no preconditions, because everybody will just be sitting there shouting at each other, which is exactly what happened. So he called those talks off because he said, we got to hit the reset button. we got to figure out how to get this thing jump started a little sooner and cut these guys off at the pass. And what they're, I think what they're doing is they're saying, if you don't want to join the ceasefire or you want to get out of the ceasefire, that's fine. We'll just be happy to bomb your asses because we'll have more free planes to do it, because a half or maybe two thirds of the country will be quiet. And that leaves more air power to take care of guys that want to fight.
Any bad actors out there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be happy to do that. And if you don't want to participate in the negotiations, that's fine too. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. But I think they kind of got the thing. We can't let the lowest common denominator here think that they can torpedo the peace talks. So what we don't know is how strained relations are between the U.S. and the Saudis. We know they are have to be some with the Turks, because the U.S. is backing the YPG Kurds. And we don't know whether some of this is play acting by the U.S. on some of this stuff, because as you know, Mike, sometimes this stuff, they'll make it look exactly like they're doing one thing when they're actually planning to do something else, except they want cover. So it's good news. And of course, for the poor people that have been suffering, you've finally got these aid trucks going in. And that's expanding. The Russians are also coordinating that, because they've got all of it at their air base. They've got all of the communications to do that. The Red Cross is moving in heavily. Germany is shipping a lot of stuff in. And I predict that as aid flows in, people start getting back to their homes. They start cleaning up, getting electricity going, water going, and whatever. Political support for Assad is going to go even higher, because he and the Russians are going to get credit for this. The West is going to be a participant, but the Syrian people are not going to give the Western actors or NATO or any of those people any credit for this, because they know damn well if it had not been for the Russians coming in and saving their ass, the Syrian army having hung on as long as they did, it never would have happened. And that's really going to be put the others in a tough negotiating position in terms of trying to muscle anything, because Assad's going to have strong support. And that's why I went ahead and announced that he was ready to have parliament elections in April. So we won't vote for president, but we'll have parliament, and we'll see how strong, we'll get an indication for how people feel, so the West can stop making these claims that nobody wants Assad in. He can only win because he runs a rigged election. So it looks like he wants to have a mini election before they work on having an election on who's going to be president.
Well, Jim, you were there September of 2014 as an election observer. Did you observe any? Pardon?
Actually, it was June 3rd.
June. Okay, yep. June of 2013, or 14, rather. You were there as an election observer. Did you notice any hijinks, or was it a clean election?
I mean, it was as clear as you could see that the election was the election for Assad. It was basically a celebration for having survived. It was basically like flipping a bird to the West, and everybody that had been trying to destroy Syria, everybody was out in the streets and saying, you didn't do it. We're still here. We know you want to do divide and conquer. We are not about to unelect a wartime leader during a war. And even though we've got political differences and we fought about this or that or whatever, not only is the country at war, but we're being attacked in a terror war that has democratic countries involved in it that are members of the UN in breach of all kinds of international laws and the UN charter and whatever. And we know what they have in mind for us if they win. So, and they, we know they want to get Assad out because there's no strong leaders behind Assad. There's nobody that can unite the country. And that's exactly what the West wants. We'll have factional parties. You'll have 5 or 6 or 8 or maybe 10 groups, all minority. They'll have a weak coalition government. That's exactly what they want. So
really what they want to do is they want to turn Syria into another Lebanon.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they want to do. And, you know, it doesn't make sense to me that civilized people would have any desire to do that. It just it just really makes me lose respect for what we call leadership in the West, because this is sad. This is not how you run a country. This is not how you run foreign policy.
It isn't. And but the wild card here is going to be Turkey. Turkey was threatening. Well, they're actually inside the border. Well, of course, they've backed off a little, and they said they wouldn't go into Turkey unless it was part of a U.S. coalition. But they're kind of tweaking it because they've been shelling, and they're wanting to keep the roads open to support their terrorist proxies that they have, because they're moving on Raqqa now. And Raqqa has really only one main road into Turkey going north. And the Turks have actually moved inside the border and they've shelled the town there close to the border that has the Kurds in it. That's been the biggest. And they also had 250 reinforcements go across the border to attack that town. That's been the biggest violation so far. And the response by the U.S. and Russia has been muted. They said no. They probably did that. The Kurds repelled that attack, and it's not the time to counter shell. So Lavrov has gone into the UN to try to get Turkey censured for that, and I can see what they're going to do. They're going to do rope a dope. They're going to shell us, kill some of our people. We just have to let them do that, and we have to go through the public, visible means of trying to get them to stop. So that eventually, if we have to do cross-border shelling, we will have worldwide support for it, because people will see that we did everything we possibly could do to make them stop, and they wouldn't do it. And of course, they cannot do that without both the U.S. and Russia agreeing to it. So that's going to be a very tricky thing where this thing could still come unglued. And Turkey, of course, does not want a successful ceasefire and negotiations going on. They want to keep the turmoil going.
Well, let's talk about Aleppo. Now, you know, the road to Aleppo has been secured. How secure is it? Is Aleppo going to stand? Are they going to move back in there?
The
Syrian Arabic army? And
it was secured, and then ISIL made a very good play. They said, we've got to get some initiative here, and they cut the road for several days. Break time.
It's break time. All right, folks, we'll be right back in a couple minutes. More with managing editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Jim Dean, right after this short break. Be right back. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. My guest is managing editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Jim Dean. Jim, welcome back, sir.
Good to be back.
So is the road to Aleppo, what's the current status?
Well, the ISIL broke it. Fortunately, they had enough supplies move forward to be able to continue the attacks. But then they marshaled forces and they reopened it. And of course, when they were doing that, they were trying to cut off those ISIL troops that had blocked the highway and wiped them out. So they're now widening it now to half source. So it's really kind of a last gasp breath. And we will start seeing more secure, like we covered in the first half, as these areas, are not fighting, people are happy with the ceasefire, they will be able to rest the troops and start shifting them around to people where people do want to fight. And I think you're going to see pullbacks because the ISIL people are smart enough. And those guys in Aleppo that are cut off, I think the only thing they can do is use the citizens of Aleppo as human shields to cut a deal where they'll be allowed out to walk out as part of some of the negotiations. So we're going to see what's happening there. But that's street fighting, and that's very dangerous. And the Syrians have not endured a lot of casualties, and they've been very careful. They haven't been doing a lot of fighting in close-in areas because civilians get killed. You start losing a lot of your troops. So they're hoping that they can get these people to push out or surrender or go back over the Turkish border.
Well, whenever we were there and we had our meetings with the general staff, it really makes my level of respect for these people go way, way, way up. I mean, they've done a magnificent job under some severe, really bad situation for them, and they've just done magnificently.
Good. So the point is the threat is really not the military one on the ground. It's the outside actors that are a main part of the threat. They have not been, of course, alt media has addressed that quite a bit, but the UN hasn't. Of course, Lavrov came out today and he did say the core of eventual success for the ceasefire. And he said, really, even before serious negotiations can be started, is the supplies have to be cut off. So he was kind of throwing down the gauntlet, I think, to the U.S. If people are continuing to ship supplies in, we have to take action to stop that. Otherwise, we're being asked to negotiate in a situation while we know people are resupplying terrorists inside the country and we're fighting and negotiating at the same time. So that's going to be the little game of showdown that the U.S. and Putin are doing. Are they going to do anything about these cross-border people, the Saudis and Turkey, for resupplying their proxy terrorist groups?
Well, let's switch to Erdogan a little bit. How much longer do you think he can hold out? He is wildly unpopular in his own country right now, and the only reason he's staying in place is because he's got such a good secret intelligence police force that's wiping out anybody who objects to him.
He has purged, and the only thing we saw, I was really kind of disheartened on anything, because you can't overthrow a government like that that has all tight hold on the reins of power. But we had that very unusual intel drop, a tremendous analytical piece that we published without changing anything. There were some names X'd out, but we did not rearrange and we actually printed everything that we had. And he had proposed that the members of Erdogan's own party were really the only feasible people that could take over. The country would not go with a military coup, no matter what the situations were. They've kind of been through that enough. They don't want it. So what he posed is that if the army did take over, they would have to turn power over immediately. None of this, going to have elections in a year or any of that. And that the only feasible people he saw were the people that had been purged from Erdogan's own party, sitting on the sidelines. So it wouldn't be, you'd have his party and they would be doing it as kind of the save the country, because there is a lot of folks realizing that Turkey, they're under a lot of economic stress now for what's going on. And they really don't want to get into a bigger war. They're afraid of what, they don't want to have a big war with the Kurds. They certainly don't want to have a war with Syria. They certainly don't want to have a war with the Russians. And they're
afraid. They do not.
No.
And Syria's left them alone. Syria's not done anything to counter Turkey's offensive within their country. So Syria's been playing this really cool. I have to, you know, congratulate again Bashar al-Assad for being such, I'll say it, a statesman. I mean, he really has, when he's been under great stress and duress for his whole country here.
And I saw a very important card played last week, which really surprised me. They had a retired military intelligence chief, and he really put his neck on the line. He basically said the troops have no interest in getting into any kind of a regional war, because they see absolutely no reason for it whatsoever. It's just going to hurt the country. Now, he wasn't attacking. He didn't criticize Erdogan's policy or anything to trigger being arrested for treason and whatever, but he did publicly go out, and he didn't think that the rank and file military, they don't want to stir up a Kurdish war, because they've been there and done that before, and people do not want to go back down that path. So he was, and I said, there's some somebody's reading the tea leaves here, putting that guy out there. Because when there's going to be a coup or some kind of change of government like that, you have to start seeding it with not only certain statements, but they have to be coming from people who have credibility and something to lose, people who are taking risk to make statements. So folks can kind of start whispering like, hey, maybe there is an opposition to Erdogan, but they just don't want to completely come out. And of course, in the old days, the military would just, you know, call the U.S. embassy and said, will you support us if we have a coup? And the U.S. would say, yeah, we'll do it if you make so-and-so president, so-and-so foreign minister. And yeah, go ahead. That would be a done deal. But I don't necessarily know whether those times still live, but who knows? If I were in the military, I don't think I would make a move to change the government without contacting the U.S. and ask them, will they get U.S. support if they do it?
Well, let's talk about that. You know, how come the U.S. Position on Syria has been, for lack of a better word, convoluted?
It's like the blind leading the blind. I mean, why is the U.S. so concerned with Europe's energy supplies? Whether they get gas from the Russians, they buy it from the Israelis, they buy it from the Azeris, they buy it from the Iranians. What effect does it have on the American economy? What risk does that have for us? I mean, do they want this pipeline from Qatar to be going through there so they can sell what? Qatar's going to buy more. They're going to buy 50% of the arms production from the U.S. and because they're going to have more money than God to spend it on. Where are they going to park the stuff? I mean, they've already got Bahrain's got huge, one of the biggest air bases in the world. We have Bahrain's got our pre-positioned theater material out there. Huge facilities. Gordon shocked the hell out of me a week or two ago. He said the UAE has an air force with 1,000 planes. I said, you're pulling my leg. He said, no, I'm not. He said, they've got a thousand. I said, that's bigger than some NATO, much bigger than some NATO countries. He said the UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey have a bigger air force as the U.S. He said they probably have more tanks, more armor than the U.S. because they've bought tons of it. They just don't use it. and it may not all be operational. And it probably, they probably can't run it for more than a few days without half of it breaking down. So that's the real catch here, is you just got so much of this arms and whatever that somebody will make a dumb move. And from what we can see now, Erdogan is the wild card. He's the one that could really upset. And I think he feels that if he doesn't really, if he's not strong and he doesn't stop what's going on, that he's going to go down. So he has nothing to lose by rolling the dice and going for broke. Because he said, if this thing continues, I'm going to get removed. I might as well go down swinging. That's the thing I always really worry about.
Well, one of the discussions that I had with the Minister of Justice on our last trip there in September was about how do you attract the Syrian refugees who fled the country for safety into Europe? How do you get them back home to Syria? Because you've got an entire generation that you've lost, and it's going to harm your country's strategic position over the next 20, 30 years unless you get those people to come back home. What was Erdogan thinking, pushing all these people north into Europe?
He wanted to just get the pressure that he was going to be destabilized. I thought it was kind of a blackmail to get into the EU.
Well, how's that working out for him? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I don't think it is. I mean, they. I was surprised. I thought the visa, they were going to do the visa thing, eliminate that, and I thought that would have gotten maybe put on hold. But Merkel's going ahead, and this EU thing, I'm surprised. It just seems that Erdogan talks with Merkel, and she makes the call on what the EU is going to do. I mean, it's really the way you read the news reports. It's kind of like, hello, they've got a European Council. Doesn't France or any of these other countries, Italy, they don't have really, Merkel basically cuts the deal and they have to just go along with it.
Is Merkel going to survive the next election?
Well, we don't know. I mean, she came out of the blue. They say there's not a visible person pushing her. But then the flip side of that is when she came in, nobody expected a former East European, came up through the old East Germany.
East German bureaucrat, that's what she was.
Yeah. And, everybody just said, what? How did this happen? So, we don't know, but yeah, my thinking about Western leadership. I mean, we need changes just about everywhere. We have the worst leadership that basically you can get. It's almost like the bottom of the barrel. They make sure that that's who rises to the top because they're the easiest people to control.
Well, Jim, that's the Khazarian mafia putting all their puppets every place they can. So that's my take on that. So anyway, you want to talk about other things, and I've taken up too much Syria time here. So
I'll say we'll go over to the Atlantic Council, and what popped up is I got hold of a link to something. They had put out a flyer on a piece called "Putin at War: Hiding in Plain Sight," and they did this last May. And it was a top to bottom, supposedly a lot of window dressing, very scientifically done. We've got all the proof. We got satellite photos, this, that, and whatever. And then you start getting into the report, and they started bringing up things, this evidence that they had. He said the techniques we used, he said one of the authors, right, it called it a democratization of intelligence gathering. And guess what that ended up being?
Hard telling what?
Social networks.
Oh, my God. Okay, so they got it off Facebook.
His sources were social networks. I said, okay. So these are the social networks where people can set up fake accounts, publish anything and everything that they want. And that's the data that you're analyzing. And as I went down and I read some of the stuff, it was every Putin smear type of thing. that every negative thing you heard, that's where it came from. And you know, the whole war was Putin's fault, that the Ukrainian people, they just wanted to live in peace, and they wanted to throw the yoke of Russian domination and be free and whatever. Nothing about right sector, nothing about the violent coup, nothing about all the statements that were made in Rada about what they were going to do to the people in the East. Nothing about the Odessa massacres, systematically, not a word of any of that stuff. None of the contractors, nothing about how when they were claiming the Russian army was massing to invade Ukraine, that they were having war games that had been scheduled going on, and they had the OSCE advisor monitors in there. They were going around everywhere, and they publicly reported that they saw no evidence of the types of things that you would need to engage in warfare, that everything was just tense. It was the type of stuff that they could take up, move down quickly. They left all of that out. So
well,
what
well,
I could,
Jim, let me chime in here, because you know, here's my read on this. You know, when we had the Cold War, and we had the evil Soviet Union and the glorious USA, the land of freedom, okay, there was a balance of power, and all the defense spending that that the defense contractors wanted was granted because we had to fight the Soviet threat, okay? Reagan pulled his wonderful move, brought down the Berlin Wall. You know, the Soviet Union came apart, and it went away. It went away, so there is no enemy. So they staged 9/11, and after pre-staging all this anti-Muslim propaganda for years to create this new enemy, this new Wahhabist extremist Islamic threat that's going to threaten us for the next 1,000 years. Well, that's been kind of a flop too. Okay, so now the military industrial complex needs another boogeyman, so yep. they're going back to the old playbook and trying to make Russia into the boogeyman that they need. Without an enemy, how can they justify spending $1 trillion a year on weapons we don't need that nobody uses?
And they also need people that make their livings and careers on fighting the boogeyman. And this is why I looked into folks. You can go to the AtlanticCouncil.org and see their Wikipedia page, which is very interesting. And as I went through and I saw some of this stuff is really base propaganda, and I said, how can they have people putting stuff out like this for a very prestigious organization? And I found out it's because the organization is prestigious. They just don't think people will even catch it. Because one of the things that surprised me, of course, we've talked about these think tanks being bullpens for people going into the various administrations when you have president's change. But I was quite surprised on their Wikipedia page, which is this is a Wikipedia page that looks like it was hand done by the Atlantic Council staff, by the way, one of those kind of Wikipedia pages. They started showing, they kind of bragging a little bit about how their people are stepping stones to high positions. James Jones in 2009, who'd been the chairman of the Atlantic Council, he stepped down to be Obama's new national security advisor. I had completely missed where these people came from. Chuck Hagel replaced him, and then Chuck Hagel, what happened to him? He came back later as Secretary of Defense. Susan Rice was with the Atlantic Council. Where does she end up? Ambassador to the UN. Richard Holbrooke, who he was at the Atlantic Council. They brought him in to be special representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan. Of course, he died on the scene. Another old neocon. Eric Shinseki, who was cooling his heels before he went over to the VA. Where was he? National, the Atlantic Council. And then Brett Scowcroft, when Hagel left to go Secretary of Defense, he had been a head of it for a while. He stepped back in as interim chairman. And then you've got Utah's ex-governor, John Huntsman, came in, and he's now head of the Atlanta Council. And he's an old neocon. So these folks are layered up. They've got ex-NATO defense secretaries in there. Richard Lugar, an old friend of ours. And then they've got funding more than 25 countries. So they're getting all their money from countries. They're not having to pay. So they can't say that it's they're getting it from they got the money clean, and they're covered up. And all of these professional people, they've got people now on the board, Michael Hayden, who signed off on this report, Madeleine Albright. It sounds like a who's who. And most people reading this list, they would think they would never be associated with people that were putting out just complete garbage.
Jim, but all these people you've just listed, these are the people who made this mess that this country finds its foreign policy in. They're not going to get us out of this trouble. They're the ones who created this swamp that we're in.
Absolutely. And folks, they don't want to stop. They go into government, they come out, they've got these think tanks with these nice cushy jobs waiting for them, and they become part of the shadow government. And sometimes they get recycled, they may be used twice, but they are.
These are all the people that need to be eliminated. They need to be disposed of. They need to be put out to pasture someplace or under the pasture. I don't know, whichever one. But these are the people who I really look at have committed treason against this country by their actions, the policies they've involved us in.
Well, what we're going to be talking about with some of our friends is we've noticed that we don't really see any counter think tank organizations really taking these guys on. And from when I looked at their propaganda, we could just rip it to shreds. But it should be ripped to shreds by a similar level of organization internationally, with things like our Russian friends and some of the people that are being targeted. And yet we don't see them countering
this. We got our break. Can I keep you on for a few minutes on the other side?
Yeah, we'll finish up.
Okay, great. We'll be right back, folks. I still want to talk about Alito as well. We'll be right back after this. I mean, Scalia, rather. We'll be right back after this short break, folks. More Jim Dean.
Hello, hello.
I don't think Mike back yet.
Okay, can you hear me? Jim is online.
Mike's typing in the chat, so maybe you have a problem.
I'm not hearing anyone.
Jim, can you hear me?
I hear a little mic fumbling.
Yeah, Mike said it's his broken audio.
It's broken audio for me.
Mike.
I can't hear Mike.
Let me hang up and call you guys back. Sorry, okay. Folks. We'll be right back. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so we're live. Okay, yep. Well, folks, anyway, everyone, welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting. And Jim, turn your somebody needs to turn their audio down because I'm hearing myself. Anyway, okay. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. My guest is managing editor of Veterans Today, Jim Dean. Jim, welcome back. We had a little bobble there on the sound, but hey, we seem to be back to normal now, which is all good.
Yeah.
And Jim, over the break, somebody sent me a note saying they want you to put an article up in VT about the beans, the health effects they have in your recipes, okay?
So I
had to pass that along. This is a regular listener who sent this to me.
We'll try to do that because, guys, my getting into this is a complete fluke. I was on the Groupon list, you know, where they would sing stuff that was targeted toward you. And of course, busy days, I often didn't click them open, but one day I did. And I looked at the list and I spotted this $26 heart scan, state-of-the-art heart scan. And I'm like, what? State-of-the-art heart scan? So I clicked it open and read it. And I said, well, it's Groupon. It can't be a lie. And they said, well, for $70, we'll even do you a lung scan to see whether you got anything wrong with your lungs. So I said, well, that's a no-brainer. And I went in. The news came back. I got a 33 rating on the heart scan. So I thought, you know, that's like the upper third. So I said, well, gosh, that's not too bad. But then I turned to find out it was the opposite. What the 33% meant was that 67% of people your age have less heart plaque than you do. only 32% had more. And I went like, because the only bad health habits I had really had that I really could see is I got zero exercise because I'm a computer nerd. I basically sit down and all my exercise is maybe going up and down the stairs. So that's what got me kind of in a panic. Then I found my blood pressure was too high, pulse rate was too high, and I went on Gordon's crash diet, which ripped off a pound a day. And I said, well, I got to get some of this plaque out, and I've got to go ahead and try to fix some of this stuff up, because right away you can find out you're going to lose 5 to 10 years of your life if you have your cardiovascular system plugged up with this crap. And I figured for 5 or 10 years extra on this planet, I'm willing to do a lot of stuff.
So, well, Jim, I got to get you to come to the gym with me someday. I'll put you on a training program. We'll buff you up.
Oh, okay.
anyway.
But I'm going to, I've got my, the preface for this Putin's war thing here, and I know the audience is going to be very entertaining. I'm going to read you some little portions, some of the highlights, and you're going to find out what I call, this is like black propaganda. They're saying they start by saying the war is a direct result of President Vladimir Putin's efforts to establish control over Ukraine. Now, mind you, he was not just trying to prevent the Russian areas from coming, you know, because you have a huge number of Russian people in that part of Ukraine, and Crimea was even more. And to basically think that you have all of those Russian heritage people living there that are about to come under the neo-Nazi boot of the fascist regime in Kiev, and that's none of Russia's business.
Well, Jim, I have to correct you, because Poroshenko and Yatsenyuk and Yulia Tymoshenko, those are not Nazis. Those are the grandsons and granddaughters of the Bolsheviks who slaughtered millions of Ukrainians and slaughtered millions of Russians 100 years ago. That's who they are. And so, you know, they may be wearing the Nazi banner today because it suits them.
Well, excuse me, that wasn't them, but they teamed up with the right sector folks. And and who's the interior minister now? So here we go with this black thing that Putin was actually trying to take over the Ukraine, which is ridiculous. And then we go on, you know, that the whole thing, it never would have happened. They're acting like there would have been, that there was this peaceful little rebellion. There were never people crowing from the Rada what they were going to do to the Russians in East Ukraine when they got there. I mean, it was unbelievable. This stuff was all publicly announced. And we're already getting information early on that it was a military coup. The U.S. was into it up to its eyeballs. Not a word about the U.S. spending $5 billion or anything like this. But then they were talking about, you know, he took over the Ukraine. You know, he broke the inviolability of one of the biggest things of the United Nations Charter. You can't violate a country's border. And, of course, nothing said about, well, don't you consider regime change and overthrowing countries and putting a puppet government in, that's not a violation of somebody's border? Doing color revolutions all over. The U.S. was trying to do a color revolution in Russia. And as you can imagine, these guys were very real big fans of Netensov, the guy that got assassinated in Moscow. Let's see. Here's another statement.
One more thing here. Go ahead.
Good. The evidence that this is a Kremlin-directed war is overwhelming. And then they just go on that the fact that, again, that these are Russian people, that shouldn't have anything to do with it. And he says the Atlantic Council report, hiding in plain sight, Putin's war in Ukraine, collects and brings the facts all to light that Putin is trying to keep in the dark. They even accuse Putin of not wanting the Russian people knowing. They actually call him that he's running a secret war. And in the 21st century, secret wars can only be fought for so long, and it's time for this one to end. We all share a common vision for Europe, whole, free, and at peace, and in which Russia finds itself its peaceful place. But Putin's war in Ukraine threatens this vision in the international order. So, and I was just reading this, and I was going like, wow. And then the last line is, we urge the European and North American governments and parliaments to use this clear evidence to inform a clear policy aimed at deterring Russia in its reckless and brutal actions.
Well, Jim, I have two comments. One of them is if the U.S. State Department was not allowed to go in and topple legitimate governments and install puppets, they'd be out of business. They wouldn't have nothing to do. Not number one. That's the first thing. And I'll say it again, and that is the military-industrial complex, which runs this country, which dominates it, needs a new boogeyman. They need a new war in order to justify continued spending. And they don't have it right now. And Putin's too clever.
Yeah. Here's a couple names. I'm not going to read them all, but just some of the people that said the individuals listed below support the report's overall conclusions, but are not responsible for the contents of this report. You got Madeleine Albright right at the top, former Secretary of State. Carl Bildt, former Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Sweden. Nicholas Burns, Harvard University, former Undersecretary of State and former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, all blue bloods here. Stephen Hadley, former U.S. Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. Michael Hayden, former Director of the Central Intelligence Agency and the NSA. John Huntsman, is now Governor of Utah, Chairman of the Atlantic Council now. Gary Kasparov, the Mr. Human Rights Foundation. Zalmay Khalilzad, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations that went to Afghanistan, and he was Darth Vader over there. Bernard Henry Levy, French philosopher and author. The Zionist, pro-Zionist neocon over there. These are the names that they pull in here, and it's all window dressing. And the average citizen, not having followed this stuff for years like that we have, they would just have no, it would never enter their mind that this is nothing but a massive PSYOPs campaign to do the classic demonization and preparing the public to support a future war with Russia.
Well, there you have it. That's what I've been saying. Now, I want to switch subjects a little bit on
you.
I want to go to this Antonin Scalia issue and the situation there. I spoke with Gordon about this at length yesterday and the day before, and the day before that as well. Can you give the listeners an update as to what the state of affairs is, what we know right now?
Well, we know that there was a meeting with the president, that he was given some information on things that had flowed up from the FBI, which came to the president's office. And it had some issues to do with child abuse and molestation.
Pedophilia, essentially. Yep. And what I got from Gordon is that they had a number of witnesses, a number of victims who had the goods on Scalia, saying, what he liked, how he liked it, his favorite flavor, his favorite style. They had Scalia cold. And
they actually gave them this. They printed it all out and put it in a big folder and said, there you go, guy. Go home and think it over. So he ended up going to this ranch for billionaires, a hunting ranch, which was kind of surprising. And we found out a little later after that that he's been going on to these junkets with the high rollers, something like 250 of these free trips, that this is one of his main avocations. But then something very strange happened. He ditched his Marshall security detail in the airport when he landed. And of course, that would have set bells ringing, because usually, Marshall, first thing he's got to do is call into the home office and say, hey, the judge, you know, he just ditched us here. He said we weren't going. So very unusual case there. Goes to this facility, wakes up dead. And then in the morning, there's this strange call where a local justice of the peace is called and they can't get anybody. So they call the sheriff. And they're trying to get in touch, and they don't want to give the name. Someone's died, but they won't give the name. And they have this very strange situation where they have to call like the third justice of the peace before they can find somebody to get over there. She has a track record of wanting to not get involved, spending a lot of time on stuff, and having botched some of these things. And looked out, and the sheriff went over. We've read his report, and what he described looks to us very suspicious people to be a very staged type of situation. Nothing was in order. Everything was nice and pretty. He was in the bed. The sheets were still tight. He was laying on his back, and I said, and then she very quickly ruled that he died of a heart attack with natural causes.
And no autopsy.
And no autopsy, nothing. Very quickly, he basically was burned up. There's nothing to be autopsied now. Just completely, none of the guests, there's supposed to be 35 guests there. There was no list of the guests. No one was interviewed about how he was feeling that night. Did he complain of heartburn or any of the symptoms or anything like that? None of the ABC that he might have been poisoned or, you know, and if there's anybody that knows that people can be knocked off and it looks like a heart attack, it's law enforcement people. And certainly the people that had been the Marshals, U.S. Marshals office, should have been in there like pronto, because they know there's renegade, there's people in the government that have done that under government immunity, that once they retire, they can go out and be contract killers, taking care of people like this, giving them the old heart attack, particularly if you're an induced heart attack. And unless you have an autopsy and you know what you're looking for, you can murder somebody that way and get away scot-free, as long as, he's a big guy and he looks like it's somebody that might have heart issues or whatever. That's something us old guys with heart issues worry about. We're easy to knock off. But we're checking on the audio. I don't hear Mike, so I guess he's off. So, Brett, if you have to reconnect us, go ahead, but I'll go ahead and carry. So we had another case where some of the information, we had this radio personality out in Utah that has unbelievable situation. He's actually kind of bragged about child molestation on some of his internet radio shows. I mean, absolutely bizarre. And he had been arrested. And just before this, and there was a connection where they were saying that some of the material that involved the judge came from this person who had been a pedophilia person for a long time and was involved in these international networks that we've been hearing of and trying to keep track of for quite a while now, because it's we know that the intelligence community was very aware of this. This type of shacking up with women and hookers used to be something that was always used to blackmail people, particularly as if they were involved in religion or any type of really, they came from a cousin like a Muslim country. And then it turned out as we went a little further, we found that if you really want to scare somebody to death and have control over them, you basically implicate them in pedophilia, and you've really got them going. Then they found out that they had certain levels of politicians that when they got to a certain level, he said, well, you're now in the club now. You can engage in this, and you'll be prosecution-free because we've got the fix in with the legal system. We're too powerful, and no one has ever laid a glove on us. None of our people have ever been prosecuted. And this goes not only in the high political systems here in the U.S., banking, in business, but it goes all through Europe. And then also, sadly, the military, European royal families. There's a huge underground network where these people are not only trafficked, but in some cases, they're even murdered. And the intelligence communities of all the major countries in the world know this is going on, and no one's ever really done anything about it. Nobody's written a book. No politician who's been tipped off about it has ever made a public statement or demanded that the secret classified files have been released. This has been allowed to go on. So what we jumped on the story right away because we figured this, if ever there was a chance to try to break this open, that now is possibly the time. And of course, another clue that we got is mass corporate media should have been jumping on all the anomalies of this death, very suspicious of death of Scalia. And they have been very, very quiet about it. The families, the Justice of the Peace cover was, well, the family didn't want an autopsy. And families, and of course, they didn't. What they didn't recognize is the families don't have necessarily the law, the final say so in something like that.
No, so, not for a sitting Supreme Court or any other federal judge. They don't. They do not.
Nope.
Yeah, that's something they signed up when they took the job, and it really gives a lot of clarity here. That you know, I was talking to Gordon. He said that he had been contacted from some sources of his within in the White House while the meeting was going on. And he says, this certainly explains why Obama would not attend his funeral and why he went, you know, separately instead of going to the funeral. Because why would you want to honor a man who has done that to harm children?
Oh, yeah. And that was a big thing. And I can tell you, folks, the reason Veterans Today got the call is because they knew we would publish the material. We are the publisher of last resort when it comes to something that's considered too hot to handle, like the Sandia Labs report on 9/11 being a nuclear event. That was offered to larger publications who took a pass on it, and we did. The material on Romney with his Cuban wife and being involved Bain Capital.
In money laundering, yeah.
For the cartels. Whatever, and all of that. And how there's been a team of retired FBI and Secret Service and intelligence agents been chasing the Bain Capital money because that is the largest reward money for money laundering case in the world at this point. Because I forget what the reward is, but I think it's 20% of whatever's recovered. And there have been people that have been hunting that. And then, of course, that's where some of our sources came from. That's sometimes what retired intelligence people do. Rather than buying lotto tickets, they team up with people and they go looking to break some of these big money laundering cases.
And collect the rewards.
Yep, and collect the reward money.
And why not? Why not? But I'll tell you, you know, I we've got an election season coming up here, you know, and I've never been an Obama fan. I haven't. I have to admit it. But I also have to admit that the Obama administration has done a better job running the country than the Bush administration before him did. And everything Obama said during his first 4 years that he inherited those problems, we're still living with the problems that George W. Bush gave us. And before that, we're living with problems that Bill Clinton gave us. I mean, this NAFTA GATT, most favored nation status for China, while we don't have a recovery, that all came from Clinton. And all these guys, I mean, this is a cumulative effect. We need to have a real sea change in this country, Jim. We need fundamental change in this country as to how we run it. And this Atlantic Council sounds like a great target to go duck hunting on. I think we need to go after these guys.
Well, they've been around since 1961. Dean Acheson basically started it, but they've got all their current papers and stuff. They've got them online, so it's just going to be a motherload of some of their past stuff. And of course, the nice thing about it is, once time goes by, you can be a Monday morning quarterback and go back and see, well, you know, was their stuff really true? But we're going to dig in it because we love stuff like this. But we also, what I saw of this is, we have to, the people that are being targeted by groups like this, we're going to be talking to some of the people that are being targeted about how they have to form counter groups on this level, and none of this monkey business of trying to do it on the cheap. Or get people to volunteer or whatever, then I said, you're never going to be able to get into an international public relations war when you have people like this after you, by doing something on the cheap or by using community activists or people that nobody knows or whatever. And it has to be a multi-country effort to eliminate a lot of duplication of effort. But we felt that these guys can be just torn down very easy. And this one example is like, you know, these guys are, they obviously have some pro-European Russians that are with them that are anti-Putin. And of course, you know, he's supposed to be the old wants to bring the communist regime back and be an authoritarian and go backwards. And of course, what they always leave out is, well, then why is his popularity rating so high? You know, it's the highest in the world.
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because he's improved the standard of living for every Russian citizen out there by 1,000% since he's been in charge. I mean, you look at Yeltsin, you know, what an incompetent crook he was, and he was better than the old Soviets. So the Russian people have really been going through a bit of a renaissance under the Putin regime. And, you know, I have a ton of respect for Putin. I wish we had leadership of that caliber in this country that actually cared about the country, the culture, and the people. We don't have that. All we have is a bunch of whores up there who are grubbing for money at every chance they can get, looking for a chance to sell themselves.
Well, and these Atlantic Council folks, to just show you how over the top they really are, they're actually pitching the Putin clan as like really a minority group of people, and that they're really hated by the majority of most Russians. But it's only because they're running an oppressive government that they're able to hold back the wishes of the majority. And of course, they had their little standard bearer was this Nemtsov guy. But again, what they leave out is they had the last time they had a vote. The bloc that's typically referred to as the Nemtsov guys are basically the pro-Europeans. They pulled 11%. They're not even the main opposition bloc in the country. The main opposition bloc is the communists, which pull 18%. So I bet you there was not wouldn't have been one person in 100, and you know.
All right, Jim, we've got our break. You want to stay? Should I let you go? It's up to
you.
Yeah,
I'll go ahead and come back on the other side, and we'll wrap up.
All right, good. We'll be right back, folks. More Jim Dean, managing editor of Veterans Day. We'll be right back. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. My guest today is a good friend, managing editor of Veterans Today, Jim Dean. Jim, welcome back, sir.
Good. Glad to be back.
But anyway, back to this whole situation. You know, I mean, the West is in trouble. The smart guys who run Wall Street and run the military-industrial complex have screwed up. They've bankrupted this country. There's a lot of value, there's a lot of wealth in this country, a lot of mineral wealth, there's a lot of human capital, there's a lot here. But as far as the monetary system goes, they've screwed it up. And they don't have any other business model other than the war machine. I mean, how do we reinvent this our world? What is a productive vision for the rest of humankind that doesn't depend on the war machine for profitability?
I don't really know, because it looks like they fear they've had some scientists come out. They've taken a look at China. Their educational system. They've taken a look at Russia's, what they're able to do with their schools or tremendous educational systems, and how many computer whizzes and geniuses they have versus the ones that we've got. You know, who's going to be able to have super duper weapons eventually? And that it's a matter of time, because we're only 300 million people. So we have to do everything that we can do now to maintain control over these people, and basically have anybody that's a rising potential threat kept down. And that's when they came up, and we saw some of this when they had the national defense policy for the preemptive strike thing changed from being what do they call that? An impending strike. We would only do first strike when we were sure that it was to stop an impending attack. And they replaced that with something that when they first read it, you had to read it over once, twice, three times. You couldn't believe it. But the language basically went like this: we reserve the right to attack any country that we feel might become a threat to United States interests at some point in the future. And I was like, huh?
That's like throwing all civilization to the wolves there.
Yeah, that sounds like, for whatever reason that we want to. And I was thinking, where I was out of the country at the time, how did something like this get passed? Or how did they get this in without an upheaval and having all the left-wing people? Where were they when this went on? I don't remember any big hullabaloo on this. And I said, this could not have been put in other than by a bunch of evil people that were planning on using this. They were planning to go out and use a loaded gun to start threatening people. And if we look at what happened subsequent to that, that's what happened. We went in preemptive strike. If you don't do what we say, we're going to have to go ahead and eliminate you now as a threat. And it's perfectly legal. So there, and that eliminates the genius of it. Eliminated having any public debate.
Well, it's maybe legal within the USA, but it's not legal under international law. That's still, the U.S., because of the management we have here and how we've been mismanaged, and how since the murder of JFK, the military-industrial complex and the Khazarian mafia have infiltrated every walk of life, every sector of our economy, every piece of our government, we find ourselves standing very firmly on the wrong side of history right now. And this is a very frightening time. This is not the country that you and I were brought up in, Jim.
And it's also a dangerous thing, even if you put one man in there as president, thinking that because they're sitting there as president, that all they have to do is start issuing some executive orders and whatever, and they can change all of this stuff. Not if you got the deck stacked all around you. because they have these guys have thought about, you know, how are we going to deal if we get a president in that somehow, what if Trump goes rogue on us? How are we going to deal with that? And they have a lot of tools at their disposal.
Well, I think that's a lot of what they've done to thwart Obama's message of change. You know, you look at, you know, the politicians come and go. You know, a congressman's lifespan is every 2-year election cycle. You know, they're going to come and go. They're like, you know, having fresh flowers delivered. You know, 2 weeks later they're gone. You throw them out. But the bureaucrats who are in there for 30, 40 years at a time, those are the ones who really call the shots. And you know, I think that's where Obama's mistake was. Not riffing a lot of these very senior bureaucrats who had been in there, that had been, you know, cultivated by George H.W. Bush way back when. You know, I mean, he's got a 50-year history here that he's had his involvement with the U.S. government, whether at the CIA, whether as a vice president, whether as president, whether with his son there. This guy has put influence and influential people in places that need to be removed. We need a new government in this country, across the board, top to bottom, left to right, north to south. The United States of America needs new management at every level. That's as plain as I can say it. I mean,
well, we're going to have we don't know where that's going to come from, because we look around and we just see people that do have those qualifications. They don't go into politics. Because of what you have to go through to be able to climb up the ladder, and what they have to put their families through. So there's an unnatural selection now of you would think the best, when we had Jefferson's concept of the natural aristocracy, that we wouldn't be by birth, but it would be by talent.
Yeah, a meritocracy. Those who are the most capable, those who have the greatest ambition, those who have the best integrity, those are the ones that should be selected to serve. Those are the ones who should serve.
And this this was before they had a popular vote, because that was back when only the state senates could vote for president and congressmen, that only learned people. Because they had the education and they knew how important it was to see to it that only the best people got put in high office. And we take a look at now, we look around and say, good gosh, you know, that certainly is not the game plan now. Because as Gordon said at the Syria talk, when we look around the world, what we basically see is organized crime and controlling the political arena is just like controlling a neighborhood. It's just one of the things that has to be controlled. And they love it because they get the heat. The public doesn't like something. The public thinks that they can vote them out of office and that's really going to change something. And they love having elections and they love overthrows. They don't want to wait for an election. They can have stuff overthrown. And, you know, traders and commodity peoples like that, there's one thing they hate more than anything, and that's a stable market. They like stuff going up and down with unpredictability that only insiders know about. So my theory is, folks, the politics is, folks, they really do look at you, and I don't mean this to be insulting to the audience, because that's never a good thing to do, but it's not me. They really view the public as basically plantation animals. Like a plantation owner would look at his stock, his crops, his slaves and whatever. Yes, I care about how healthy they are and this and that and whatever, but that's only, they love the sheep because of they get the wool from it and that they're going to have it for Christmas dinner and whatever. And that's the extent of it. And they all know that with people, you know, you've got to schmooze them. So you get all of this stuff, and then yet you see what these people do. They get out of public office, and you think they go away, and they don't. Because with this Atlanta Council, they're going over, these think tanks are really the shadow government. The big money's there. They're able to put it all. It's all 501c3, tax-deductible money. They're putting that money into politics. They're funding bullpens for these people to cool their heels and influence peddlers. And they have tremendous power in these things. And this Atlanta Council is only one. Now, it's referred to as NATO's think tank. And it's a major one. But there's huge numbers of these. And nobody runs for office. And they have all this window dressing. There's never really any investigations of any. There's never been any really big scandals that I've known of. There's nobody needs to steal any money because everybody's going in there. They've got pensions. They've got six-figure salaries. They've got paid accommodations. They have all of their tabs basically picked up. These guys are the Chinese mandarins that are ruling even when they're not in office, folks. These people are still ruling over us because they're deciding what we are going to think. And that's why these think tanks have these people come in and they do these position papers. They're written by unknown people, but they've got all the front people on the front end of it where they have these big conferences and whatever. And the general public must think this must be the best work product that can be that we can get, because obviously people would have to compete. There's a meritocracy to see who the people are to get these top think tank jobs. And these have to be the best people. And they don't realize that it's a rigged game. It's just a show, and it works. And nobody wants to rack the boat. The mass media, they go into these think tanks to get people. They shop for opinions where they know they're going to get. Fox News goes to certain types of think tanks for people. And MSNBC goes to other types of think tanks for their canned type of opinions. And none of them ever come to Veterans Today to get an opinion on anything.
Well, press TV does, an RT now and then.
Right. And we get but there's not a big market because we have a market with our alternative media, and we have our claim to fame is we're still standing when a lot of folks have been burned out. We got out of the blogger mentality early on when I came up with VT, and everybody and their brother thought they were going to be a famous blogger and make $25,000 to $50,000 a year on the huge audiences they were going to have in the Google ads. And I said, these people got to be smoking crack. Nobody wanted to be a researcher. Nobody wanted to do real hard grunt. Everybody wanted to be a commentator because it was all opinion stuff. You didn't have to study anything. You could just read the news, and everybody thought they could just go online and pontificate about the news every day. And they forgot about, well, yeah, you can do that. And so can 100 million other people. And how much time do you think the public has to listen to a bunch of yahoos and I don't knows or people presenting themselves with aliases? Why would they care what you think about anything? And I have to ask myself this when I'm getting ready to do a show or I'm getting ready to write an article. I say, why would anybody want to read this? What's the subject matter? What kind of title am I going to put on it that people are going to say, that sounds very interesting. I think I'll click and take a look at this. And what have I got to put in this article where at the end of it, if it's a new reader who will walk away saying, hey, this was very interesting, I may have to save this guy's link and maybe take a look at his archive page. You have to deliver or they're just going to go somewhere else.
And absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's plenty of places to go. I mean, you know, it's not like the old days. I remember one time I had a client. He was a landscaper in Buckhead. And, I mean, he was doing his estate, and he was rolling in money. And I said, and it turned out he put one of the first online advertisements, websites up in Atlanta. So when people Googled, you know, landscaper for Buckhead, it's a rich area, and he was the only person that came up.
So he locked up the market early.
So he was just like, and of course, what he didn't think about, he probably thought that he was going to retire. You know, he didn't realize that within a couple of years, there were going to be a lot more people with websites. But we've never sit down. We realize we have to stay on top of things. We realize you've got to have good people. If you don't have sources that will give you material, you don't have people that you can trust, you cannot stay on top of this game. You have to have people around you that can't be easily compromised, because that's been one of the problems with the internet. You have a lot of burned out people that may have started out doing some good stuff, but they got angry because they weren't making $4,000 a week in Google Ads. So finally, and they spent all their money and they second mortgaged their house, and they're not a big media empire. And then somebody, they find out they can sell out, and somebody will at least give them $500 a month.
Yeah.
And they can pay some bills, and they go, well, I'm gonna get something. I'm not coming out of this with nothing. I'll be a shill.
We see a whole lot of that. That's something that everybody has to be aware of out there. Let me ask your opinion. We got an election coming up. We got Trump in the midgets on the Republican side. We got Hillary and Bernie on the other side. It's Super Tuesday today. Make a prediction for us. How do you think this is going to shake out?
I'll tell you something I saw that caught my eye today.
Okay.
Is they said it was a poll done with Hillary as president and Bernie as vice president. And guess what?
What?
It beats Trump.
It beats Trump, huh? Well, you see, yep. my thought on that is that Trump needs to name Ben Carson as his running mate and do it now, because then he's going to peel off black voters from the Democrat side and get them to vote in Republican primaries. And you could run as two outsiders. You know, Trump an outsider, Carson an outsider. You have Trump is competent. You have Carson is compassionate. Makes a great ticket, competency and compassion. And then there's no upside to pulling a JFK on Trump, because if you do that, you get Carson in there, who's another outsider, still not an owned commodity like a Rubio or a Cruz or any of those guys. If he names somebody like that, they're going to blow his head off the first 6 weeks just to get rid of him. I mean, it's just kind of how it is. I hate to think this way, but this is the world I was raised in. This is how you have to think.
Well, I'm basically going to be on pins and needles the whole way. I don't think Trump's a loose cannon. I got a feeling that once he's got the nominations and he starts really campaigning, you're going to see emerge some of the people that are really behind him that he's been trying to keep low key. And I feel the guy is very, very skillful at telling people what they want to hear. And that once, and he's slick enough to know that once he gets in there, and I don't think he's really concerned about being president for more than four years. I don't think he would really worry too much about being a two-term man, that he would just go in there and do whatever he wanted to do. But I can't see the guy working with anybody. I can't see any kind of a team player. I could see him literally being a loose cannon. Now, I know a lot of people that basically say a loose cannon is better than a rigged cannon.
Yeah, they had a rigged one.
Well, and I'm going like, gosh, that's kind of a strange political argument. I never thought I would be having someday. You know.
Well, it sure be nice to have a beautiful, elegant first lady in the White House, and Trump certainly has got that that base covered with his lovely wife. So
yeah, when they have to steal the China, when they go like the when the Clintons, they had to take inventory and had to repurchase some things.
Uh huh.
Because they wanted their souvenirs when they left.
Kind of funny how that works. So what do you think about the down ticket? The down ballot come out. You know, who are the Republicans going to gain seats? They're going to lose seats. You know, what do you prognosticate a bit here?
I haven't followed it very much because you're having to get into kind of the state politics. I know historically the country and don't quote me on this, they've never liked one party to be in control of, you know, all the powers of government, and that people will vote for the other party because so that they will have,
balance.
Some balance, because they're really worried about
some equilibrium there.
Some equilibrium there, but then they worry about we've got the classic thing of, why does anybody care when you poll them and the public opinion on Congress is so low? You just kind of wonder why people get excited about the elections if it's so low year after year after year. And the congressmen certainly don't worry about the low rating, because they just said people come and they want favors for us anyway, and they want to buy our votes, and they love to have us come and be close to us and get invited to stuff. So they may tell the pollsters that they hate us and we're doing a lousy job and whatever, but I get reelected every year, or nobody, for a lot of them, nobody runs against me.
Well, personally, the biggest thing that I enjoyed seeing in this election cycle so far was seeing Ted Cruz get caught for dirty campaign tricks. I enjoyed seeing him get caught, because when I ran for governor of Arizona, I lived through that. These guys were pulling dirty tricks on me daily. All this kind of nonsense, like Ben Carson dropped out, he didn't drop out. All this stuff that Cruz has been busted doing, and I think it's a good thing. And just that alone makes Cruz reprehensible and not worthy to serve in any public office. But these are the things. This is what goes on behind the scenes, and normally, well, like in my case, these guys got away with all this stuff. They got away with assassinating my character and saying these things that were just flat not true. And they got away with it because I wasn't Trump. I didn't have the gravitas that he had. Didn't have the bankroll that he had either. If I had his money, I might have done a little better. But it's an amazing process, and nobody can tell you what it's like to run for public office until you do it. It's like having a bomb go off. Nobody can tell you what it's like to have a bomb go off next year until one goes off next year. You can't explain the experience. It's unique upon itself.
Well, I take my hat off. I could never pony up to the table to do it. I would say beat me, tie me to the horse, and have it drag me down the road. But that would be a torture. I would not want to.
Well, you know what, though, Jim? If they did that and the horse drug you down the road, at least when it's over, it's over. Yeah. This running for political office and losing, this is the gift that keeps on giving. It does. I got stuff that's going to follow me around the rest of my life, and it's BS. It's stuff that's been fabricated, and it's how do you get rid of these things? It's there's nothing you can do. That doesn't matter who you really are. It's what they can make the public think you are, and that's where I was so delighted to see Ted Cruz get caught being a rat, being a slimy politician. I was glad to see it.
Well, I think that's a good note to kind of end on, folks, because for a couple of reasons. VT has always been a place for what we refer to in the business as walking wounded. Folks that we know that have been poorly used and needed a place, a little home to kind of get reoriented and get back in the business and whatever, because we know we have a lot of people here who've had careers that have been up and down and business cycles and change of life type things and whatever. And you no man is an island. You cannot do big things by yourself, and you have to have a network. So, but also in this day and age, when you find people that you really like what they're doing, people need support. Because people cannot do stuff. It's not magic. We don't sprinkle fairy dust. And we need support to continue doing what we do.
Well, Jim, thank you so much. I got to tell you, it's been delightful having you for the whole two-hour show. I'm going to mark this date down on the calendar.
Oh, that's good. It was a good change of pace for me.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Be well.